Welcome to Breakthrough Business Strategies Radio, and happy Monday to each and every one of you. This is your host, Michelle Price, and on Twitter, at Prosperity Gal, coming to you from the third coast of Houston, Texas. You are in for a real treat today. Those of you who tune in regularly are used to our very first Monday. We always have Don Cooper on for Breakthrough Business Strategies, our savvy sales tip. Today, you get to have him for the whole radio show. How awesome is that? For those of you who have not had a chance to hear from him before, he is known as the Sales Heretic, and Don is an absolutely fantastic sales coach. Now, he is a speaker as well. He works with companies, helping them and their sales team to really hone their skills. One of the things that I love that Don does by being our regular guest here on Breakthrough Business Strategies Radio is he serves for you as a speech coach when he is on the show. And so I'm going to ask you, how are you leveraging that time and that knowledge that he's sharing with you, going to put it to work for you, getting results, and then are you coming back and saying, hey, Don, here's what worked for me, and I really like that. I'd like to work with you on a regular basis. So please join me as we welcome Don Cooper today. How you doing today, Don?
Good morning, Michelle. I am wonderful. How are you?
I am doing good. That little bit of a sunburn that I got when I went to the beach last weekend has finally healed.
Oh, glad to hear that.
So, you know, this is a really interesting topic, or the slant that we're taking around sales today, because one of the biggest things that we hear in sales training is you're supposed to sell the features and the benefit of your product or your service.
Right.
Why does that not always work?
It's kind of a long story. I'm glad we've got some time to work with this, because there's a lot of factors at play here. And we first really need to understand, you know, what features and benefits really are. And, you know, what you just said, we've always been taught to sell features and benefits is not necessarily accurate. And part of the reason for that is that most of us have really never been taught what benefits are. When I work with a coaching client, or when I'm doing a seminar, or even often when I'm giving a keynote speech, I'll ask people, you know, what are the benefits of your product or of your service? And the things they respond with are not benefits. They're features. So the first challenge is to understand really what is a benefit versus a feature. So I want to make sure everybody understands that first, because so many people are taught, well, sell features and benefits, but they're not really taught what those things are, and they end up just spouting features. And that's the worst thing you can do. Because if all you do is spout features, you have almost no hope of making the sale. You might get lucky, but that's all you got going for you. So I want to be real clear. A feature is a characteristic of a product or service. It's something about that product or service. What that feature does is called an advantage. It's the functionality of that feature. A benefit is what it means to the buyer. So those are three very, very different things. So very often I'll ask people, you know, what's the benefit of your product? And say, oh, well, it's got this, you know, this great gadget. No, that's a feature. That's part of the product. What does that do, and why should I care? And that usually brings a blank look on their face, because they haven't thought that far. Most of us love our products. We love our services. If we work for ourselves, if we're a professional, then, you know, we know what we do. We love what we do. And so we tend to think of everything that we do and everything that we sell in our own terms. So if our product has a lot of great features, we're proud of those features, and we talk about those features. the problem is people don't buy features. So the first step is to get away from talking about features and talking about benefits. This is really the first issue. If people are selling on features and the prospect doesn't buy, well, that's why. You never even got to benefits in the first place.
You know, I'm sitting over here going, this reminds me a little bit of the conundrum that I have with clients in teaching them how to interact in social channels, because they tend to want to talk at people instead of with people. And they tend to not understand it's about having conversations about what other people find valuable versus just what you find is valuable. That sounds a whole lot like the whole stuck on features versus benefits.
You are absolutely correct. It's the exact same dynamic. When you're in a networking conversation and you're talking all about yourself, the other person's not interested. They become interested and they become engaged when you ask them about themselves. When you give them a chance to talk, that's when they get interested. That's when they get engaged. That's when you build rapport and connection. The same is true with features and benefits. When you're talking about features, you're talking about your product. You're talking about your service. That's all about you. The prospect doesn't care about you. So you don't have their attention. You don't have their interest. You're not building rapport. You're not building trust when you're talking just about features, because that's just about you and nothing at all about them.
And I think the challenge is when people are thinking about that in their brain, when they hear you and them, they think personally you and them, when it's really the company and then the client.
Yeah. So a lot of us have been taught to sell features and benefits, and we've been taught when the prospect says, you know, I'm looking for this or I need some of that, we believe, okay, well, we just spout off all the features of our product, and those are actually benefits, and then once we do that, they will say yes. And that is a non-starter, because the features don't grab them, the features don't excite them, the features don't move them to action. So the first step in this process is understanding that odds are, if you think you're speaking benefits, there's good odds you're not. So look at your sales presentation. Think about the last few times you talked with a prospect. Think about what you said to that prospect and how you described what you do or you described your product. Odds are it was all features-based. So you might be thinking you gave them all the benefits and they said no, and that didn't happen at all. You just gave them features and they said no. So take some time to think about the features of your product or of your service and ask yourself these questions. What does this do? Why is this here? And then once you have an answer to that, ask, well, what does that mean for my buyer? What does that mean for my customer? Here's an example. Most of us have laptop computers. Well, my laptop computer has a CD/DVD drive. That's the feature. That is the characteristic of the product. The advantage of that drive is that it both plays and records CDs and DVDs. That's its functionality. That's what it does. That's why it's there. That's the advantage. Here's the benefit to me as the user. I can watch movies on the plane!
That's my favorite thing about my laptop.
Yeah. So, Michelle, what do I really care about? Do I care about the drive or do I care about movies?
I care about the movies.
Yeah, that's it. I don't care about the drive. The drive doesn't excite me. The drive doesn't motivate me. The drive doesn't attach to my senses. The drive is just there. It's a thing. I don't get excited about it. What I get excited about is how that impacts my life. It's the fact that on a 3-hour, a 5-hour flight, I can watch whatever movie I choose. That's what really matters to me as the buyer. I don't care about the feature. I care about the benefits. And that benefit, I guarantee you, is not in the sales copy for that laptop computer. The manufacturer, the distributor, the retailer, nobody ever said, by the way, this drive means you can watch movies on an airplane. Nobody thinks that far. People in marketing, professionals in marketing, focus on features. You look at any laptop computer at any store, and it will just list features. It's part of the reason why Apple has been so successful. If you look at Apple's commercials, they don't focus on the features of the iPod or the iPad or the iPhone. The commercials feature people using them to do things. Apple shows how users are affected by their products, what they can do with their products. That is exciting. People watch those commercials and say, oh, that's really cool. I'd like to be able to do that.
That sounds like a good question to ask, Don, is to kind of sit on the other side of it and go, what will my product or service allow my customer or client to say, I want to be able to do that?
Yes, that's exactly it. So if you have a lawn service, it might be, I want to be able to look at my lawn and say, this is the best lawn in the neighborhood. I want my neighbors to drive by my house and look at my lawn and feel jealous.
It's actually kind of funny to think about that. You would think logically that people wouldn't care, but oh my gosh, do they?
Yeah, logic has nothing to do with this. It really doesn't. Sales is all emotional, and you got to figure out what emotions your product or service can tap into. And features don't tap into that. Benefits do. That's why you have to ask yourself, why would this matter to the buyer? You got to find out what emotion you can resonate with, whether that is pride or fear or love or greed or guilt. And all those things are neither good nor bad. They just are. Those are emotional triggers that we all possess, and we make our buying purchases for those reasons. And features don't touch on them at all, because features are all about products or service. Features are all logical and rational. We don't make decisions logically and rationally. We wish people did. Lord knows, sales would be a lot easier if we all made our decisions logically and rationally, but we don't. So you've got to tap into the emotional triggers of your buyer. What emotional needs does your product or service fulfill? What emotional needs are your prospects struggling with right now that your product or service can be the answer to? What are the negative emotions they've got going on that your product or service can alleviate? What are the positive emotions they're looking to achieve?
Yeah, I had a lesson with you last week around negative and positive emotions and what triggers prospects and buying. And you did a great job of looking at what I had done so far during the process and said, Michelle, you haven't showed them the pain you're going to keep them from having enough yet.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem for so many people in sales is they don't do a good enough job figuring out what's really going on with the client. What are their real issues? What are they trying to achieve? What are they trying to avoid? Too many salespeople focus on the pitch and not enough on the questioning process in the first place.
Well, now I agree with you on that. This particular time, because I have been listening and putting into practice what you've taught, I felt like I asked lots of questions. But what I learned after our last session is that a lot of times a client will answer questions from like, well, this is what we want to accomplish, or this is our, these are our objectives, or this is our goal. And those are all positive positions. In other words, if they want to get, you know, so many new clients, or they want to get a certain kind of attention at a conference, because that's one of the things I do, or, you know, that's all positive positions. But I forgot to ask them, so what's going to happen if you don't achieve that?
Right. So you've got to ask all kinds of questions. I'm going to get more into this specific issue in a few minutes.
Okay. So let's stay on point so we don't jump around and confuse people too much. So one of the things you're talking to us about how we need to be more benefit-focused, but are benefits universal, and aren't they the same for every buyer?
That's a great question. And the answer is no, they're not universal at all. Benefits are unique to each buyer, which is part of the reason why it is so hard for manufacturers, distributors, retailers to come up with those benefits, because they're looking at their product, not their customer. And customers are different. They have all kinds of different needs, different wants, different priorities. So what one person perceives as valuable, somebody else might not. I was talking about my laptop earlier. Well, the next person who walks into the computer store and looks at that laptop might never fly. Well, if they don't fly, then watching movies on an airplane is not a benefit for them. Features the same, but the benefit is now gone. Because benefits have to do with the individual, not with the product itself.
Okay, now hang on, because I'm hearing something in this.
Yes.
So if it has to do with the individual, let's back up a tiny bit and have the same conversation around a company. So if we're selling to a company, are we having to deal with both the benefit to the individual who's the decision maker as well as the benefit of the company for their objective?
Yes, 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 yes. Absolutely, Michelle.
God, that's hard.
Yep. Yep. I never said this was easy. And it's a big part of the reason why so many people selling B2B have a difficult time. Because you've got to look at the benefits both for the organization as a whole and the individual making the decision. And those can be two completely different things.
Answers. Yeah.
What's that?
And the whole game of them not always giving you accurate answers.
Yeah, exactly. Keep in mind that the benefits for the organization and the benefits for the individual can be very, very, very different. And yet you have to address both of them. And too many people don't do a good enough job finding out what those issues are and addressing them. We tend to forget that people who are buying are still people. They still have emotions. They still have emotional needs. So part of this is to figure out what are the needs of the prospect, both on an organizational level and the personal level. And that requires a lot of questions. Most salespeople and professionals don't ask anywhere near enough questions. They think they do. They don't in reality.
I'm always afraid I ask too many questions.
That's a common fear. People say it to me all the time, but I don't want to ask too many questions. I say, why not? I've never had a client say, you're asking too many questions. A doctor would never prescribe a medication or a surgery without asking a lot of questions, doing a lot of research, trying to find out what really is going on. Well, a salesperson shouldn't either.
Mm.
We got to find out everything that's there. What bothers prospects is not being asked a lot of questions. It's being told a lot of stuff that's not relevant to them.
Yeah.
And get back to what you were saying earlier, Michelle, about being in conversations when you're out networking. If I'm talking to you and I'm telling you all about me, I'm going on and on and on and on, that's what drives you nuts. That you can't stand. But if we spend the whole time with me asking you questions, really tell me more, you know, about what you do. How did you get into that? What do you love most about being on the radio? What kind of consulting do you do? Who are your ideal clients? What's a big challenge you have in your business? You'll talk about that all day. time will zip by, and you will finish that conversation on top of the world, won't you?
I'll enjoy it, but let me tell you what I noticed in those situations, Don. Everybody's jockeying to be the person to ask the questions, and no one wants to do the answering.
Well, that happens occasionally. I usually find that the opposite is the case. Most people want to talk about themselves. And that's especially true in sales. People want to get right to the presentation. They love their presentation so much, they want to hurry and get to that quickly because they think that's the key to making the sale, when the opposite is true. Asking the questions is the key to making the sale.
You know, I was asking myself as I was listening to you talk about how important it is and most people don't ask enough questions, and I just kind of zoned into that and asked myself internally while you were talking, why would I feel that way? And you know what surfaced for me?
What?
It feels intrusive to ask too many questions.
Yeah.
Talk about a limiting belief.
Yep. Yep. You talked about mindset earlier, and that is one of the mindsets. If you believe you're being invasive, then you won't ask enough questions. And yet you cannot possibly help the prospect choose the right product or service without asking questions. So we think we're being invasive when really we're being professional. And that's a real important mind shift people have to make. We ask questions not because we're nosy, but because we need enough information to be able to prescribe the right solution for them. So don't be afraid of asking too many questions. Be afraid of asking too few.
Well, since we're talking about questions and you were talking about how important it is to get down to the needs so that we'll know which benefits are going to be the ones that resonate for that buyer, can you give us some examples of questions that need to be asked at this part of the process?
It's a long, long list. When I do training for companies or I speak at events, I will give people anywhere from 20 to 40 questions to ask, which seems like a lot, and it is, because you have to ask a lot of questions to really dig down and uncover the prospect's real needs. So you might start with broad questions like, what are your primary goals? What are you trying to accomplish right now? They might include things like, what are your biggest challenges right now? They could relate to how they've used your type of product or service in the past. You know, do you own one of these currently? You know, what do you like most about it? What problems have you had with it?
It sounds like, from my own experience, that maybe people get stuck in the broad questions and never get down to any, what would we call, a niche question?
Right. Very often people will ask a question, get an answer, and then move on without realizing that the answer they got is the tip of an iceberg. And there's a lot more there, but you got to really get your head underwater to look at it. So one of the things that I encourage salespeople to say is, really, tell me more. Or can you elaborate on that? Because very often if someone gives a one-sentence answer, that's not the whole story. There's a lot more there. The challenge is we're so often in a rush to get to our presentation, we skip over this stuff. And this is the real meat. People want to talk. They want to be heard. They want to be understood. And we, as salespeople, need to give them that opportunity.
So would a good way to ask some of that be, so that I can understand what your real challenges are, can you tell me more about that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I can see where I might not have been asking enough niche questions. What would be an indicator, Don, that we would need to look for while we're in that process to know if we've asked enough or it's time to shift into the next stage?
When they don't have any more information to give you.
Now, you and I both know that I've had situations where people said they didn't have anything else to say, and then I've come back and talked to you, and I came back with more questions, and then all of a sudden we were able to uncover more. But at the time,
yep.
the prospect didn't think they had more.
Yep. And that's, we're going to get to that more in detail later. That's also one of the reasons they won't buy, even after we've laid out the benefits properly. And that's why it's so important to ask these questions, because you want to give them every opportunity possible to give you all the information they have. But even then, you may not get it all, and that's okay. But if you skip over stuff, if you rush through the process, you definitely won't get all the information you need.
Oh, I have to say, the more we talk, the more complicated sales seems to me.
It can seem that way. It's not complicated, though. It's really simple. It comes down to just ask, ask, ask. Ask until you are certain in your head you understand what's going on. And it may take time. That's what we're afraid of. We're afraid it'll take too much time. Prospects don't mind that, though. Prospects are happy to answer questions, because prospects understand that when they are asked good questions and they answer good questions, it means they're getting closer to the right answers, the right solutions for them.
So what kind of advice would you give us to sit down and do some prep work to feel like we have plenty of questions? Because I know for me, and I'm going to use myself as the guinea pig here, because this is how we all learn through this process, is that sometimes I get into the conversation and I'm literally sitting there going, okay, I feel like I need to ask something else, but I don't know what it is.
Well, that's why you need your questions up front. It's why when I do training, I give clients all these questions, and I instruct them to memorize them. To do it slowly, a few questions a week over the course of several weeks, memorizing a list of specific questions makes it easier to ask the right questions when it's that time. If you walk into your sales interview and you don't have a firm game plan, you're not going to ask the right questions, because your questions are your game plan. No football team would take the field without all their plays written out, scripted out, with the head coach knowing what's going to be called in what situations. And everybody's got everything memorized, because you can't just wing it. You've got to have a plan, and you need to know exactly what you're going to do in what situations. Same is true with your questions.
It would be interesting to see how many people actually plan their questions out.
Very, very few. And that's part of the problem. We have all been told, ask good questions. But nobody ever tells us what those questions are. And that's why I give them to people when I do seminars and training, because the exact questions are so critically important. So ask yourself, what is the information I need from my prospect to be able to help them make a good decision? Mm. What do I need to find out from them? What are the issues that are going to influence how they make their decision and what they choose? Think of everything from the prospect's point of view. Get out of your own head. Get into their head.
That's a challenging thing sometimes. Sometimes I'm really good at getting in other people's heads and thinking from their perspective. And other times when I try to do that, it just seems like a blank page.
Yeah, it's not easy. We're used to being in our own heads. And it's a lot harder to get in somebody else's. That's why so many sales experts over the years have told us sell features and benefits, because that's easy. Rattling off a list of features is simple. Anybody can do that. A trained monkey can do that. That's not selling. Selling is learning about the client's issues, their concerns, their desires, their fears, and then translating all of that into benefits with our product or service being the vehicle to create those benefits.
Oh, you need to say that again. That was good.
Anybody can just list features. That's not selling. If features were all that mattered, we wouldn't need salespeople. All anybody would have to do is put a list of features in front of a prospect, and they would say yes. That's not what a salesperson does. A salesperson's job is to learn about the prospect's issues so they can figure out what the benefits are and present those benefits to the prospect, with our product or service being the vehicle for achieving those benefits.
I've got homework to do.
I believe a lot of people do.
Okay, now earlier you pointed out how a feature can create more than one benefit. So what a really good exercise for us to do would be to sit down and say to ourselves, all right, I'm going to have some fun, you know, whether you make yourself a cup of coffee or, in my case, I can't have that anymore, so I'd make some fresh juice, and go, all right, what are all the ways that this feature could be of a benefit? And just kind of brainstorm.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And if you work with a team, get your team together and make this a team exercise. And think of every single feature associated with your product or service, and think of what are all the potential benefits this can create. Because this CD-DVD drive does other things as well. You know, it means that I can burn backups of presentations and whatever else onto CDs and keep them with me. I can burn master CDs to have them duplicated by a duplicating company. There's a lot of things that it can do. I only care about a few of them. But you need to know all the different benefits your features create because everybody has different needs. So if your feature, let's say, creates five different benefits, well, each of those benefits might resonate with one of five specific customers. So five customers, five benefits, offer one feature. The key is being able to direct the right benefit at the right prospect.
There's an interesting comment in the stream. And by the way, Linda, if you use the hashtag BBS Radio, then everyone else can see it. So I'm going to retweet that for you and add it. But she said she thinks that you can just wing it once you know your subject. And I'm going to hold my hand up in authenticity again and make me the target. Linda, in all fairness, do you really think I don't know the subject of social media or marketing or communication and relationship marketing? I mean, my God, look at all the stuff that I produce on that topic, yet I've not always been able to close the deal, and I've been prepared. So, no, I've gotten to the point where even though I think I know what their needs are, I've identified several things they're doing wrong, and I know what they need to do to change it, and I know that they don't necessarily have all the skills to do that. That still doesn't win me the business, and I've done a little bit of analysis ahead of time.
Yeah, again, because it's not about you. It's about them. So it's not about knowing your subject. It's about knowing your prospect, and the only way to know your prospect is to ask them the right questions. And if you don't have those questions memorized, you're not going to be able to get the information you need on a consistent basis.
Yeah, because that's what I'm looking for, and that's what has been really great about working with Don, is that I want to be able to get myself to the point where I have a sales process and system that's duplicatable, and I'm not having to hustle each time I'm trying to close a deal. And I'll hold my hand up again and say I'm not there yet.
Steve Martin had a great line in his memoir. He was talking about doing stand-up comedy at comedy clubs in the 70s. And he said he found that it was easy to be great. What was hard was to be good. And he explained what he meant by that was that every performer has those nights where everything just works. And you don't know why it just does. What's really challenging is to be good consistently, every single time being on, knowing what you're doing, knowing how you're doing it. And that's true in sales, it's true in business, but true in almost everything. You know, in baseball, any hitter can have a great game. Great hitters, though, have good games all the time. And that's true in every sport. It's true in every area of life. So you can wing it and occasionally hit a home run, sure. But if you have your process established, if you've got your game plan set, if you have your questions memorized, then you can do that a lot more often.
Yeah, I want to do it more often. And I like what you said. That really helps to flip our mindset around. It's not about knowing the subject. It's about knowing and understanding the prospect.
Yes. And again, too many salespeople know their product backwards and forwards. They know their issue backwards and forwards. They know their stuff, but they don't know their prospect at all.
Well, yeah, because a lot of times it's the first time we've gotten into that kind of conversation with them. That's why they're a prospect, not a client.
Right. And again, we have been taught that the key is selling features and benefits, so we rush through the interviewing process to try to get to the presentation because we think our presentation is the key when it isn't. So you can be sitting up there talking about features all you want and not make the sale. And even if you can translate features into benefits, if you're not using the specific benefits that are appropriate for that prospect, then you still have missed the mark.
So is that what you mean by when you're – well, let me rephrase that. What do you mean by selling benefits?
If you're selling features, as we talked about earlier here, you're not going to engage people.
Right.
So if the person on this laptop is telling me about all the features, about the disk speed and the RAM and the drive, yada, yada, he's not connecting with me.
Right.
If he asks me, you know, do you travel a lot? And I say, yes, I travel a lot. He says, well, you know, this DVD and this battery life and this DVD drive, you can watch 2 full-length movies on a cross-country flight. Bing, 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 bing. Now my head's lighting up because that's personal to me. That gets me excited. That's a benefit. So telling me about the memory and the drive don't do anything. Telling me about what that means for me and how it impacts my life, that's a benefit. That means something to me.
So selling the benefit means that we have to be willing to go deep enough in the conversation to find out their specific needs. Oh, wow, and that's a lot of questions.
Yep, 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 yep.
All right, so what about this, though? Because I've seen this. So you've laid out you've asked the questions. They've told you, you know, here's what we need to accomplish. You found out why that's important to them and what it's going to do for them. Then you lay out the benefits that are supposed to hit that, and they still don't buy. What the heck is going on there?
That can be several things. And one of the issues can be something you mentioned earlier, is that they may have an issue that they didn't think about. You asked a question, you got an answer, but it wasn't a complete answer. Or you got half an answer. Or there was another issue, you got 3 issues, but there's really 4, and they didn't think of the 4th one. And again, this can be a disconnect between the individual buyer that you're talking to and the organizational needs. And this happens a lot when selling to an organization, when you've got one primary point person who's beginning the process, but the decision will be made either by somebody else or by a committee of which this person is just one part of. So the individual you're talking to might not have all the information. So that means you need to find out who all the different players are in this decision-making process.
And you don't always get told the truth on this one, I can tell you for a matter of fact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, one of the questions that can help you to get closer is this question. Who else needs to be involved in this discussion? Or who else do you think should be involved in the decision? Or even who else is going to want to be involved in the decision? Never, ever ask, are you the decision maker? That's an ego-challenging question.
Yeah, even sometimes when you ask it the unego-challenging way, their ego still gets activated and they're like, well, it's me.
Right. in which case you might go further. Are there stakeholders who will get upset if they aren't consulted before the decision is made?
Don, is it okay to ask it kind of like that, but adding, are there stakeholders who would get upset if you signed off on a check without their participation?
Yes.
So I can throw the money thing in there.
Right. Or you can ask, in order for this to be successful, who would it help you to get buy-in from first?
That's a good one. That makes so much sense. After, you know, the whole hindsight, when you look back on previous conversations, that's a good one.
So there's a lot of different stakeholders here. There are a lot of different influencers here. And there's a principle at work that I call Cooper's Law of Decision Making. Cooper's Law of Decision Making states, in any organization, decisions are made by the person furthest removed from the impact of those decisions.
Oh, my God.
So you want to know who the stakeholders are. And one way to ferret that information out, even if they don't tell you up front, is by asking, again, the right questions. I tell people all the time, every time you ask a question, you get a point. Every time you ask a question the person can't answer, you get 10 points.
Why do you get more for the ones that can't answer?
Because if they say, I don't know, it means they need help. They need information, whether it's from you or from somebody else in the organization. So very often, if you're talking to a data gatherer, somebody who's been charged with just collecting information to pass on to somebody else, when you ask them a question they can't answer, they feel compelled to put you in touch with their boss. I've had it happen all the time.
Which helps you to ferret out the real decision maker.
Yeah. You know, a VP wants to hire a speaker or a trainer for their sales meeting, and they've instructed their assistant to make some calls, get some information. And what they're expecting to do is to just get a bunch of packets and or videos or whatever so that the VP can review them. But I don't play that way. I don't just give information. I ask questions. And so as I'm asking their system all these questions that they can't answer, they start to think, well, gee, my boss is not going to be happy if these issues aren't addressed. I need to put this guy in touch with my boss. And it happens all the time. Then I get to talk directly to the actual decision maker rather than somebody else. If there's a committee involved, I can talk to the whole committee very often. Now, it requires some guts. You've got to be willing to put people on the spot. And you have to be willing to push. Again, didn't say it was easy.
I have a feeling that's probably why a lot of people don't do that. That's
yep.
An interesting point to make.
It's just so much easier to simply send them literature or to deliver a canned presentation. Those things are easy. They're low risk. They don't put anybody's ego at stake. Doesn't require a lot of effort. And that's why those things often have a low success rate.
Yeah, you're acquiescing your power.
Yes, precisely. So that's one of the issues that's at play. You might, have a great interview with the person that you're talking with, but there are more than one stakeholder, and you don't get their information, their concerns. So when you put together your presentation, based on the information you got from your one contact person, your presentation is incomplete. And you hit all the benefits that your contact said were important, but you missed the benefits that are important to the other stakeholders because you never talked to them.
So is that where, for example, earlier we talked about how one feature can create more than one benefit, uncovering everybody who's involved in that process is their own personal benefit as well as the group benefit is going to move you forward to the next stage.
Right. So, for example, one feature of what you're selling might be low cost, is IT friendly, and will increase the marketing reach. That's three benefits. Well, those are three advantages because what they do. Those are all going to appeal to different people in the process. So to the IT manager, the idea that it will integrate very easily with their IT systems and not require new people and will reduce their downtime, that's important to that person. The CFO doesn't care about that. The CFO cares about saving money. So saving money is a benefit to the CFO or the finance person, whereas expanding the marketing reach appeals to the marketing manager or the sales manager. So one feature, three different benefits, appealing to three different people.
I'm going over in my head situations where I could have asked more questions.
And everybody listening, I will lay odds that you can think back to your last several sales encounters and think about what questions you didn't ask that you could have or should have. And that's why it can be valuable to do what you suggested, Michelle, which is think about your features and brainstorm all the possible benefits that creates.
Now, let's go back to what we talked about a little earlier about how we've laid out the benefits and people still don't buy. Why do benefits not – hang on. Let me ask the question again. Why doesn't everybody like benefits? Why does that not, like, resonate with them, make them want to take action, move them forward?
That's a great question. And the reason is we're not all the same. As hard as this might seem to believe, not everybody is benefit-oriented. Michelle, I know you. You're a very positive person. And you think big, and you're always seeing the bright side, and you're an optimist. You see potential. I'm the same way, and so I get that about you. Not everyone is like that, though. Roughly half the population is positively focused. They look at the bright side. They move toward things. They are motivated by benefits, by getting things and achieving things. The other half of the population, though, is negatively focused. They're motivated by staying away from things, by moving farther away from things, by not having bad things happen. And that can be really hard for a positively focused person to conceive of. And in my experience, most people in sales and most people who run their own businesses, they're business owners or professionals, they tend to be positively focused people. But roughly half of the prospects they're talking to are negatively focused. And there's a disconnect there. Because positively focused people and negatively focused people think completely different ways. So if you're talking about all the great upside of your product or your service, and you're talking to a negatively focused person, they can't see that because all they can focus on is the downside. What are things that could go wrong? What are the potential problems and pitfalls? I was doing a project a few years ago, and I was looking for some partners. And I called up somebody that I thought would be a great partner for this project. It fit with what they did. We're not really competitors. They could make money on it. It was really easy to do. It was a classic win-win. She said no. All she could talk about was the downside, the potential negatives. And there were some, granted. They were small. They were minor. They were, to me, almost insignificant compared to the massive benefits that were there. But that was all she could focus on. I called somebody else who I was reasonably sure would turn me down because we're actual competitors, and the upside for this person was a lot smaller. He said yes immediately because he saw the upside.
Oh, my goodness. So there goes that lesson you're always teaching and reminding us every year, to not make an assumption on the person making a decision.
Right. You never know. If I hadn't called this person, we wouldn't have been a partner on this project.
All right. So I've got to ask, because, again, good gosh, I'm raising my hand a lot today, teacher. How the heck do you deal with a negative focus prospect? That is so hard for me. My brain doesn't operate that way.
It is hard for most salespeople. Again, because most salespeople are positively focused. So we have a hard time thinking downside. We don't think negatively. And we have a hard time understanding people who do. Because we're thinking, why would you say no? This is so great. It's so obvious for you. Does everything you want to do. But does it work? Because they're thinking, well, you know, this could go wrong. It's the Eeyore complex. This will never work. This is going to go wrong. That's not going to be what I want. That's all they can think about. So the way to sell to a negatively focused person is negatively. And I know that sounds weird. And yet that's the key. Show them what else is going to go wrong or get worse if they don't take action. So rather than focusing on how it'll help them achieve their goals, focus on how it'll help them avoid the problems they're concerned about getting worse or materializing. Because that's what they're focused on. They literally can't see all the good stuff. So you need to show them the bad stuff. So rather than how your product or service is going to help them increase market share, show them how if they don't take action, their market share will continue to erode. They're going to keep losing market share. And how it's going to accelerate. It's going to get worse if they don't take action. And again, this is the opposite of what most of us in sales are thinking. We're thinking positive. We're thinking increase market share, dominate your market, more customers, more, better. That's the way we think. But a negatively focused person doesn't think that way. So you have to think the way they think.
Can we somehow translate that into some real life examples? Because even having heard you told me that for a long period of time, I have a hard time actually putting it into words or putting it into an example or putting it into a situation.
Okay. Let's look at the lawn service again. A positively focused customer wants a beautiful lawn. They want to be able to play on it. They want their kids to be able to play on it. They want to be the envy of the neighborhood. That's what they're thinking about. Well, a negatively focused person is thinking about having to mow the damn thing. And about weeds, and about bugs. That's what they're thinking about. So if you're a lawn care service provider, you need to adapt your presentation to the type of prospect you're dealing with. So if you have a positive prospect, talk about how your lawn care service is going to help them have a green lawn, and how it's going to free up their time on weekends, and how everyone's going to be jealous of how beautiful their lawn is and how much their kids will enjoy playing on it, how safe it's going to be, how beautiful it will be, how it's going to increase the value of their home, all those positive things. But if they're a negatively focused prospect, focus on how, you know, if they don't buy, how they're going to be looking at spending every weekend, you know, trying to keep this lawn alive, and how weeds are going to multiply, because weeds do multiply. That's what they do. That's their purpose. And how the bug problem is going to get worse, and how bugs can go from the lawn into the house without proper care. Find all of those fears they have and show how those fears are going to get worse by not taking action.
I'm typing that one.
And this is diametrically opposed to the way most of us have been taught to sell.
Yes.
And yet it's the key for selling to that kind of buyer.
Now, when you're in that, what you've gotten to the point where you asked all the questions, it was time for you to do, as you call the pitch, or I say, you know, create the proposal. What are ways that you can be noticing or paying attention when you're going through that and you're trying to get the buy to hear when someone's positively, good gracious, my lips aren't working today, or negatively focused?
You need to be a little bit of a detective. You need to be a little bit of a therapist. As you're asking questions, listen very carefully to their answers. How are they answering? What are they responding to? If you ask about their goals and their objectives, and they go on and on about those, and you ask about their challenges and they don't talk a lot about those, they're a positively focused person because their primary focus is on the positive. If, however, they respond to their goals with very short words and phrases and sentences, but they get expansive talking about the challenges, they're a negatively focused person. What gets them excited? Do they get more animated talking about the positives, or do they get more animated talking about the negatives? What turns them on more? What do they connect more with?
Okay. So
ask questions like, you know, what are your primary concerns about making this kind of a purchase? That tells you a lot. If they have a few concerns, then, you know, they're a positive person. If they go on and on and on about their concerns, they're a negatively focused person.
So when you hear them going on and on and on about their concerns, how do you address that in the process?
Well, first of all, you nod and you write down what those concerns are, and you ask them to expand. Fear is a powerful motivator. The problem is, for us in sales, with a negatively focused person, fear will prevent them from buying. So their fears of the unknown, their fears of the product not working or not delivering, their fear of spending money, their fear of everything and anything and everything will keep them from buying. So we got to dig down and find out what these fears are and what are the causes of those fears. Because our presentation needs to address the causes of those fears. We need to either alleviate those fears or stoke other fears. Ideally, both.
Can we try to alleviate their fears? Okay, so here's what my brain's going. If they're negatively focused, how do you alleviate their fears without going positive on them again?
By addressing what the fear is and how the product or service is going to prevent that problem, solve that problem, deal with that issue. So we're talking about market share. We're talking about, you know, marketing for a company. Well, the marketing manager wants more market share. That's what they want. That's what they want. But the CFO is looking at their cost. So while you're talking about increasing market share, you mentioned CEO how this is going to save the money. And it will free up money to do other things and address their other challenges they have within their company that the CFO has told you about.
I'm just kind of letting that sit and absorb in my brain. Because the other thing that I'm noticing that can make this situation interesting and challenging and frustrating is if you're in a situation where you've got a group of people that are part of the sales process, you've had to uncover what are their actual challenges, figure out what benefits for each one individually as well as a group, and now you're also looking at, okay, are they positive and negative focused, and then how to translate all of that in each one of those people's languages. And then I'm guessing at that point you got to figure out how to summarize it all so it makes everybody happy. Oh, my God.
That's what we get paid for. That's our job. That's what makes a good salesperson worth every dollar they bring in. And it's why small businesses get big.
Yeah, I'm ready to just hire someone to do the selling for me.
That might be the answer. If you're a small business owner and you're thinking about this and saying, I can't do this, this is beyond me, that's okay. Hire somebody. Hire somebody who has these types of skills and who enjoys these kinds of challenges. I love this stuff, personally. It's part of what makes me good at what I do. And I love teaching this stuff to others. That's also part of what makes me good at what I do. Top salespeople figure this stuff out, or they learn this stuff from others, and they make it part of them. They adapt to it. They adjust. And then it becomes natural for them. You look at any top-performing salesperson or professional in any industry, and you'll find that they adapt. They adapt their style. They adapt their approach. They adapt everything about themselves to whatever profit they're working with. For a few people, it comes naturally. For others, we have to learn it. It can be learned, though. And like anything else, the more you do it, the better at it you will get.
You know, one of the things that I recognize has been a frustration, and this may end up turning into another topic, but it fits in this process for me now, and that is I've wanted to be able to figure out how I can create a standard process and presentation so that I'm not having to recreate the wheel every time I make a sale.
You can create a standard process. However, that process will need to adapt because not all prospects are the same. And prospects are not going to adapt to your process.
Right.
So having a process is good. That process, though, needs to be adaptable to any given situation. And you cannot have one presentation. You can have pieces, building blocks, but every presentation needs to be unique to that prospect.
This is contrary to what big companies teach their people.
Yep, certainly is.
And yet they've stayed in business.
There's a certain economy of scale. To an extent, sales is a numbers game. And even if you perform poorly, you can still make sales if you do it in a large enough quantity.
So that's where that whole thing that you've taught us, you really shouldn't be focusing on just numbers in sales. That's where that deviates, your skill level as a salesperson.
Right. If you are an individual salesperson, or if you're a professional or small business owner, you can't be numbers focused. You don't have the time, the energy, the money.
Or the bandwidth.
Precisely. So you need to get better on a skill level. You need to get qualitatively better. For a big, big company with lots of money, lots of resources, they can have massive salesperson turnover. They don't care.
Yeah, when people have said to me, well, it's just a matter of you getting more people in your pipeline, I'm going, but there's only so much bandwidth that I can actually go out and do that with.
Exactly.
So their advice is kind of, it's not helpful and it's lazy.
It's easy. It's not effective, though.
Oh, I like that. You've just given me a new title. All right, so as we're rounding down on this, when we're talking about presentations, though, is there a way to make creating effective presentations easier so that when we get to this stage of the process, we have a better chance of having a home run?
Yes. The more preparation you do up front, the easier things get when you get to the point of having to actually deliver. It's the same as football teams practicing their plays all the time. So they're not trying to create a play on the fly in the middle of a game. If they do a play, they run it a whole bunch of times in practice. They have created hundreds of plays, and the coach picks and chooses which ones to use in the situation. Well, in the same way, you want to create your list of questions up front so you know what questions to ask when. And you can create building blocks of your presentation. So you figure out what all the benefits of your features are, who those benefits appeal to, what are all the negatives that you solve, or what are all the problems that can get bigger without your product or service. Do all of that homework up front, and then when it's time to make your presentation, you can just assemble your presentation from your building blocks. You don't need to recreate it out of whole cloth each time. You simply pick the relevant pieces from your arsenal and put those together for this particular prospect.
That makes sense.
Again, you're not winging it. You're doing your practice and your preparation ahead of time so that you can perform effectively when it's time.
You know, you said something earlier about memorizing your questions, and I noticed that any time that's really effective is when you're more role-playing or practicing versus just reading them off to yourself. What kind of suggestions would you have to people who are entrepreneurs or solopreneurs where, you know, they don't have an office of people to do that with like you would at another company to be able to do that?
Well, I coach my clients, and when I do seminars, I say this. Figure out what your questions are, write them down, and work on just a few at a time. Try to memorize, say, 4 a week or 5 a week. And the way to do that is to keep writing them down physically by hand. There is an actual connection between handwriting things and brain processing that information. Create flashcards. Quiz yourself. So you might put 5 questions on index cards, turn them over, write the numbers down, and then see if you can memorize, okay, which number was which question. You can role play in your head. You can role play with a friend. You can role play with a family member.
You see how I'm asking questions that aren't going to give you guys easy outs and excuses? Oh, I'm a little sneaky that way.
Love it.
Well, you know how I do that, Don, and here's another authentic moment. I ask myself, all right, what are the ways you make excuses to yourself?
Uh-huh.
I'm sitting here thinking that most guests who come on the show are usually talking from the perspective of a topic that's inside their book. We're talking to you about something that you deliver for clients, whether it's individually or at a company, on a consistent basis. So it just seems to make sense to me, Don, that we might want to ask you to share with people who would be the best people to benefit from working with you.
The people I work best with tend to be professionals, business owners, salespeople, people who sell for themselves, people who need to improve their sales to improve their lives. From a company perspective, a company that I do speaking training for, they tend to be forward-thinking companies, progressive-type companies with sales forces that want to be better. I like working with salespeople that want to be exceptional. And I like working with companies that want to give their salespeople every possible advantage.
That makes total sense. Because from what I know about you being positive and unique and different and seeing solutions, basically what you just said is you align yourself with companies that align themselves with their core goals, and your core goals are aligned.
Right. I am not a motivational speaker. I can't motivate anybody.
Yeah, I see people try to do the opposite. They try to take what they're really good at, and they align themselves to someone who wants it delivered differently.
Right. So I can't motivate somebody. Somebody can only motivate themselves. I can tap into their motivation. So I like working with people that are already motivated. And the same is true for selling. You can't motivate somebody to buy from you. What you can do is stimulate their internal motivation, either in a positive way or a negative way, whether they're motivated to move forward toward something or they're motivated to move away from something. That's what you're doing. And again, that has nothing to do with your features. It has everything to do with them.
Sounds to me like one of the best classes or lessons that if we're business owners can learn would be to take off our hats quite a bit. We need to learn how to take off our hats more and put on their hats more.
Yes, absolutely. It's like an actor taking on a role. The actor is, you're not watching the actor, you're watching a character. The actor is the conduit for the character.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't understand that either. When they think or hear of acting, they think of someone getting up there and pretending. When
right.
in fact, a good actor is not pretending Jack. They are actually that person.
Correct. They're getting into somebody else's head. And that somebody might be historical or fictional. Either way, it's the same. And we need to do that with our prospects. We need to get into their heads, our theoretical prospect and our actual prospects. What do they want? What do they need? What do they fear? And the more we dig down into that, the more we understand them on an emotional level, the more effectively we can create a presentation that addresses their emotional needs.
I just thought of something. If you're being introduced to, you know, how there's usually a go-between, whether it's someone at the company or someone that knows who they're referring you to, what are some good questions we can actually ask them about the person that they're referring us to so that we can already have a leg up in how to be having those conversations with the person who really wants our services?
Well, ask how they know the person and how well they know the person. Ask, what else can you tell me about them? What kinds of things motivate them? Do they tend to be a very positively focused person or more of a negatively focused person?
Yeah, because I notice when I ask people to just tell, can you tell me a little bit about them, they tend to almost freeze up, kind of like when someone does when you're looking for referrals and names don't come to mind to them.
Right. It's too broad a question.
Yeah.
So narrow the question down.
Makes sense. Is there anything that we or I have forgotten to ask you around our topic today of why benefits selling, you know, what to do when selling benefits don't work?
No, I don't think so. You've asked me a lot of great questions today. You have been really, really insightful into this. And there's one thing I do want to mention. I have a free bonus for every listener. I've got a special report entitled 10 Ways to Boost Your Sales Right Now. And that is free for anybody listening. It's on my website, a special page, which is doncooper.com/BBS. And on that page, you'll find the free download for that special report, as well as some special deals for some of my resources. I mentioned the questions that I give people when I do seminars and workshops. There's a program there called Outsell Your Competition, and it includes 36 questions that you can ask your prospects to get that information we talked about.
I could see how that would be really helpful, because sometimes when I'm trying to come up with questions, my mind goes blank.
And most of us are that way. We've never been told what the questions are, so I give people the actual questions. So you can get all those questions from the program Outsell Your Competition. It's on that page, doncooper.com/BBS, at a special deal just for BBS listeners.
Well, Don, I want to thank you so much for helping us to uncover these challenges around features, benefits, and what to do when it's not working.
You're very welcome, Michelle.